Hi, my name is Mark Schweigert. I'm a developer evangelist at Microsoft. I focus on U.S. public sector customers, and what that means is customers that are either doing work for or are U.S. government customers. We're here with Northrop Grumman to demonstrate an application that they built using Microsoft Surface to demonstrate how you could use Surface in a military command and control scenario. All this work was done here at the Microsoft Technology Center in Reston, Virginia. Russ, you're an employee here at the MTC in Reston. Why don't you give us a little bit of an idea what the MTCs are all about?
Sure. So the Microsoft Technology Centers are available to our customers to come in, and they're a place where we'll have Microsoft technologists along with other partners, and we'll help customers envision, architect, and even prove out custom solutions based on Microsoft softwares. And where appropriate, we'll bring in partner solutions either. So we do that through three primary means. We have strategy briefings, where we'll sort of envision and help folks think through the art of the possible, kind of at a beginning stage. Then we'll also have architectural design sessions that are a little bit deeper. There we're trying to say, okay, if we pull all these parts together, here's how they would fit, come out with sort of a high-level design for how they can move forward. And then finally, we have proof of concepts. And there we actually get together with our customers and go out and build out a solution. And that's what we've done here. So these solutions or these POCs are anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. We'll come together with our technologists, bring customers in here, hunker down in a room much like you see here, dev lab. We've got a whole data center that's dedicated to this, and we'll go ahead and put together a solution, kick the tires, push it around. The work that you see here is a product of a proof of concept.
Great. So James, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm James Chinden. I'm the user experience evangelist for public sector. And I come from both a design background and a development background, and I really focus on two different types of people in public sector, both design firms and, like we're going to talk about today, development shops who are interested in our user experience types of technologies like Surface, and then how can they practically implement these applications.
So Chris and Paul, you guys were the two developers from Northrop Grumman that worked with us to come up with what we're going to see shortly. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, the group you work in at Northrop Grumman, and your involvement in this project?
My name is Paul Conley. I work for Mission Systems of Northrop Grumman, mainly working with IRADs in terms of seeing what new technologies and where we can take those to extend and innovate the systems of record that we're currently working with.
So for the folks that don't get the military and the Northrop Grumman lingo, you want to tell everyone what an IRAD is?
IRAD is just an independent research and development.
So you guys basically do a bunch of R&D to support building software for the military.
Right, to see what's out there, see what's the next leading stage of the technology that we can use, and just try to enhance the warfighter and the military department in general of what's next, what's coming, and how to take what they have and go forward.
Cool. How about you, Chris?
And I'm Chris Mason, also with Northrop Grumman Mission Systems. I work in support of an outfit that we call the Advanced Concepts Demonstration Lab, and an environment where we would be either bring in or we build these, you know, new and innovative technologies, products, software, hardware, et cetera, and see how we can apply them, to solve problems in our government customers' problem space.
And so you actually have a background in touch computing, right? You've been doing touch computing for a while now before ever, coming to Surface and interacting with what we have to offer.
Yeah. Our group has a long history with multi-touch computers. Going on probably now about 6 years, primarily in GIS-based applications, but not necessarily limited to that. And we're trying to always look at new technologies and new devices that we can use to what's the next step and how to make these multi-touch GIS applications easier to use or more powerful. How can we extend their functionality and keep solving more these different problems that we keep getting sent to us by the government. So. Surface is the next one in that list, and we're real excited to be working with it. It's a really nice product to be working with.
Cool. So before we rip the tarp off and show everybody what we got here, why don't you tell us a little bit about the demonstration that we're going to let everybody see.
Right. The application we'll be showing today is what we call C2MR, which is the Command and Control Mission Rehearsal. Now, this application, we're just trying to take certain subsets of the systems of record and apply those in an extendable and innovative process to see what we can use in a 360-degree style Surface device.
And so the idea here is that we're going to do mission planning, right? Which is what soldiers have done for ever since wars were fought, right? And figure out how we can use technology, and specifically Microsoft Surface, to show how we can make that experience better and extend existing systems that the military already has to accomplish
right.
these sorts of things.
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, I remember when we first started this, we were talking about a rock drill, and I didn't know what a rock drill was, but they were saying that the military right now would be doing drills where they're drawing in the sand and doing much of what we're going to do here, but augmented with technology.
Right. You take your sandbox that they're using now, being just a map or something, sitting on a light table in a command center. Now you're taking that, put it into the horizontal, and so you have an electronic device based in the sandbox where you can, instead of using your rocks and your sticks and drawing in the sand, you're actually doing that with real visuals, real style of data, you know, with real input of photos and whatnot on the device itself.
Great. So, Chris, you're going to be the primary driver of the demo here, so why don't we move the camera around, turn the lights off so we can get a good view of the app?
So what you see here is our what we call our C2MR application, which is Command and Control Mission Rehearsal. So what you see is these cards that represent the various missions in the system. These missions come from a system of record, and they can be either missions that are have already happened or missions that will be occurring in the future. We are using right now just two kind of canned demos here.
And so this isn't real like government data, right?
No. This is
nothing sense. We're not sharing any private sensitive secrets.
No, this is just stuff that came off the top.
You're not
going to
kill me after the video.
No. Okay. But so you see these cards here, and these have various details about them, so you can see the, kind of what happened in the mission. You know, this little description here. You can see other information about the cards, about the mission themselves on the back of the cards, and I'll go into a little bit of that a little bit later. These, you know, Surface is obviously designed to be a multi-user system, so you can have different people interacting with these cards. So if people want to actually read the details of these missions, you know, they can kind of pull these cards around and look at them and exchange them and flip them around and, see the details of them. So, you know, if, you know, James wants to read that one and Paul wants to read this one, you know, you can sit there and flip them around and look at the details of them. So in this really interactive and collaborative way. So let's say you're actually, you know, got a bunch of, you know, military planners sitting around this table and now they want to say, they want to focus on this fuel convoy mission. And so they want to, you know, bring this map up and see, you know, what's actually going to happen in this mission. So they click this little button here to bring the mission up on the map. And
wow. So now you're actually getting your virtual sandbox in the most part, right?
Exactly. This goes back to that
rock drill, yeah.
That rock drill, and then you instead of drawing, you know, lines in the sand, now you draw them, you know, on the table in this really natural and fluid interface.
So is that what typically happens when they do these types of mission planning?
It's kind of historically, you know, what's happened, and especially like the the field and stuff like that, you know, they'll sit there and they'll just kind of take what they have available and you know, do this mission planning on them. All these controls are designed to be, you know, 360 degree accessible so that they can be, you know, sit there as you just saw Mark spinning with the dial. You can sit there and fling them around the table. You can spin them in circles. You know, people can be interacting with them all at the same time.
You know, it's a funny point about the dial, and James, you'll probably get a kick out of this, because I remember looking at the dial at first and thinking to myself, why the heck did he put a dial on this thing? And then I immediately put my hands on it and rotated it. Because as a human being, I know that you can rotate a dial, and so it just made sense to do that.
Yeah, I was trying to open the safe.
So we have this application here, and it brings up this very basic map using Virtual Earth. And naturally, as any, you know, good mapping application, you know, there's various modes that you can see, you know, data. And so if you want to see the satellite imagery, for instance, you can bring it up the satellite view of that. If you want to see, you know, annotated views, you can see these labels and so on and so forth. You can see the roads. So essentially what this scenario would represent potentially is, let's say you had a new soldier join your unit, and they were going to be driving this fuel convoy. And so you would sit there and you would show them the satellite view of this map and of the area that they're going to be driving around in, so that way they can kind of get familiar with the area before they actually go and drive, instead of having to try to, you know, find their way off of a sheet of paper. And it's just a lot easier to kind of visualize things like this than it is to sit there and actually experience it for the first time without knowing what you're doing.
Right.
So, you know, as you're sitting there driving these, you know, planning this mission out, well, you see these little dots on the screen here. These dots can represent, you know, various things, and you know, maybe there was an incident on a previous mission, and they came down from our system of records saying that yes, there was an incident here on a previous mission. So either be, you know, watch out for them, or you know, maybe plan an alternate route, things like that. So you can bring up these. You know, sort of drawing tools, and you can sit there and you can kind of plan these alternate routes and say, well, you know, okay, so take your normal route that you were driving here, and then maybe, you know, when you get to this point, you know, take this turn up here, and then come back around here and avoid this, and then drive down here, and then come back that way, and you can kind of avoid these you know, potential problems areas. And again, this is designed to be collaborative, so if you know, James doesn't like my suggestion there, he can suggest, you know, an alternate path, and you know, and then Paul can make it another suggestion to you know, point this out. And this is designed to be multiple fingers, so, you know, Russ can sit there and draw, you know, three other paths and you know, suggestions and kind of just typical military planning, you know, with X's and O's and arrows and, you know, lines and drawings.
So the symbols that we see there are actually data from a back end, like superimposed on top of this map. Okay.
Correct.
Gotcha.
So are those static images, or is there something we can do with them?
Right now they are static images. You know, we're looking at ways in the future to animate them and make them change over time. We're not there yet. You know, yeah, it's still kind of in development. We got some stuff kind of working along these ways, but you know, we're
so you mean like actually tracking the vehicle going down the route, for example? So like maybe down here you would actually have an icon that would represent, you know, a live route, and maybe the vehicle's sending GPS data, and we can have real-time information about
precisely
what's going
on. So cool. we can you know, track stuff in real time and animate these icons as they're moving around the map. We have other technologies, other products that do this already, so now it's just a natural extension to do this to Surface. So let's say, you know, going back to our scenario, that they're taking an alternate route and they're driving down this road here, and let's say another incident happens on this particular mission. So they can sit there and they can file a create an incident report essentially at this point here, and this will bring up this little situation card where they can you know, describe it and type in all the details and fill up, you know, when it happened and where it happened and so on and so forth.
Cool. Well, when you touched the table there a minute ago, you could see that the, I don't know what it was, but the lat longitude for the geocode points, they'd come up. So was that just an interaction that you had on the table? Once we clicked the spot report and we touched the table, that it's pulling in that geo reference data and adding
right
it to these fields here?
That's correct. So it does a translation from when you click on the map, it does a lat long lookup and geocodes that report to that spot on the map.
And so basically Virtual Earth is saying, hey, you touched here, guess what? That's this latitude and longitude.
Right, and all that feature comes essentially out of the Virtual Earth API, so we can just sit there and ping it, and it'll give us data back.
And this, did you have to code that?
The keyboard comes with the Surface environment, so as long as you provide a text box that you can type into, you can sit there and it'll get this keyboard by default. And actually it's kind of nice because the keyboard shows up here, for instance, but you know, if somebody else wants to type in something, they can do it and spin it around. So again, all these features, you know, come built in with, you know, the Surface SDK, and we're just, you know, using them. So
you know, the Surface is really a nice device to get very natural interactions, and pretty neat that you can enter in data just by simply touching the map. Hey, here's where it happened, and up comes the dialogue with the information in there. Pretty natural.
Yeah, the new aspects of this with the natural user interface, it brings people in and they want to touch and they want to manipulate and just add their two cents for the most part to the table and to the sandbox itself.
So a lot of these things that we're doing here have been pretty typical of other, you know, multi-touch applications that have been happening for years, and we've had been working with these multi-touch applications for many years. So we are, you know, this thing lets us do other nifty things as well that haven't been available to us before. So we can sit there, for instance, and let's say as they were driving the route, they took a bunch of photos along the route. So we can bring up this little pod here, which is this little sync pod, where you can sit there and you can take a camera phone or anything along these lines. You can drop them on here and pull these pictures off and see, what these pictures were taken along the route here. So if you want to bring up, translation cards, English and another language, so you can ask people questions, post-mission analysis. If you want to, reference a couple of pictures here and this, reference this picture here in terms of the geo scale. So you can say these pictures were taken along, this route, and you can bring them up later, and you can say, do some more analysis on them. You can do this. So you take them out to people, and you can ask them questions. Did you see anybody or anybody act suspicious while you were on your mission? And they can sit there and they can draw on the map, and they can say, well, I saw this person, and he planted a little object here. This little sign, had something with it. I don't know. There's a number of things that you can point out.
Yeah, whatever you needed to express.
Exactly, and it can be, again, done by multiple people. Multiple people, can sit there and they can make, comments about it, and you can really get some really fine, granularity as you really blow these pictures up and see the details of the pictures that were taken.
So that you can take, the associated waypoints of that route with these photos, and again, just continue to create some type of analysis of the situation of what's going on and how it's working and whatnot. So missions in the future and all that know what's out there, what to look for, and maybe any suspicious activities.
Exactly. One of the things that I was just thinking about is more and more cameras, and I'm sure the military has access to this, but more and more cameras now are coming with little GPS devices in them, and you can actually take pictures and have them automatically geocoded based on your existing location. So this would be really cool if the cameras that they're using did that, and then they just automatically had a bunch of these icons on the map that said where a bunch of stuff was taken, and they just could
just
randomly select the ones and say, oh yeah, because then all of a sudden when you come in on this map, you say, I remember this thing happened here. Oh yeah, that was this, and then they can just immediately go in and start doing that analysis you were talking about and providing richer information about what happened on the spot.
Right. Yeah, just pulling that metadata in from those pictures and even the conical shape of where that view from that camera was at that time and adding all that to here, so you're seeing the same thing that the soldier or whoever saw when they took the picture out in the field, and now you're applying it again in the horizontal for people to collaborate around and understand what's going on in any certain hot spots.
So also, just kind of building on that, going to something Paul said a minute ago, you take these pictures and you associate them with the mission and you pass them up to our system of record, and they're able to use this data for future mission planning. If you go back and you flip the card back around, you can see now that these photos are now associated with this mission. So the two that we just added here, both of them have now been added in this card. So when you pass them up to our main backend, those photos will go with it, and we'll be able to use those again in the future.
All right. So we had just wrapped up, but we just realized that we forgot to show something that we thought was really kind of neat to show. So what's the Xbox controller over there sitting there for?
Right. So this application, is designed mostly by people who can sit there and interact with, fingers. You can zoom in and zoom out with your fingers and control it that way. But, for people that come from maybe like a gaming background, you can use this Xbox controller as well. In the Virtual Earth,
control
backend, the controls and stuff have let us interact with these direct input devices naturally. So we can sit there and we can use this Xbox controller, and we can use it to zoom in and out, and we can pan the globe around and try to do this upside down. I'm really bad at this.
So you're actually taking both, it can handle the touch inputs, but at the same time you're taking an external device, like the Xbox controller run on XNA, and actually manipulate the same things that you would with your touch features, right?
Exactly. So this is just another way to handle devices. If somebody may be more familiar with this kind of input, they can just pick this up, and by natural default they'll get this capability built into the system.
So do you have to write any additional code to do that?
Nope, that came built in with the Virtual Earth controls.
Cool. All right, well, thank you.
So appreciate you taking the time to show us the app you built. I was wondering if you could kind of give us a little bit of insight as to your experience with the Surface SDK. You know, I've kind of known you before. You have a background in .NET development, and you've done some WPF work. So what was it like to get up to speed on the Surface SDK?
So I've been doing .NET programming essentially since version 1.0 came out. So I've been pretty familiar with the .NET framework and all the C# stuff and following over time. So over the past year or so, I've been starting to play around a little bit more with WPF and things like that. And so when I had a chance to work on Surface, all of a sudden that WPF knowledge just translated right over, and it was actually very easy to build these Surface applications just with the WPF knowledge that I had, because the SDK is uses WPF components with the whole small variations, and you can just turn these, build up these basic WPF applications and or Surface applications with the same basic knowledge.
So is it safe to say that if you're a WPF developer, you're pretty much a Surface developer, plus you have to learn a few new concepts around natural user interface and multi-touch and those sorts of things?
Yeah, there's a few things that you have to be a little bit more aware of. This whole concept of a 360 degree interface, that is not something you can always experience on Windows. You have a top, bottom, left, and right on a typical monitor. So now all of a sudden you don't have that, and you just have this table in front of you, and it's, you can be interacting with it from any aspect of it, from any side, and you just got to go thinking that thing.
So with that, we've got all these pieces that we're able to move around and flick and rotate and everything. Did you have to write all that logic to get that functionality?
So a lot of that actually came built into the SDK. The SDK comes with this concept, this control, whatever you want to call it, of what's known as a scatter view. And you take a basic scatter view item and you drop it onto the scatter view, and it gets these basic inertia and spinning and flicking and these kinds of manipulations built in by default. So at that point, it's just a matter of adding our controls on top of them, our features, our programming on top of that. Then coming in to design them and change the design, the look and feel of them, they can be different. But the actual basic underlying physics of them comes built into the SDK. Cool.
So, Paul, your story is a little different.
Yes.
You kind of came into this about as green as you possibly could be when it comes to coming into a software development project. Your background is Java development. You had done no .NET development at all coming into this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got up to speed into a position that allowed you to actually develop part of the solution?
The Java background, I was actually sent to WPF training, and with that I was able to understand the concepts of WPF, and then playing around with the simulator with Surface itself, it gave me the understanding of how things were to interact with the no inputs, there's no orientation with the 360 degree concept of the table itself, and maybe have to sit back and understand a new way to look at programming in general. And yeah, I was being fed with the fire hose at first, but with the help of the MTC and Chris here, allowed me to come up to speed somewhat pretty quickly, and WPF training adding on top of that allowed me to actually interface with it and actually add to the development stage.
So did you feel as a Java developer that getting ramped up was hard, or was it easy, or was it somewhere between?
Just had to go from object-oriented to object-oriented with the C# environment. And again, just once you understand the concepts of how things flow with the animations, with the continual process of things going into it, with the inertia, physics, and all that built into it, it wasn't too bad. But at the same time, there was some hurdles.
So James, clearly when you look at an application like this, and you look at any of the Surface applications, and the majority of the WPF and Silverlight applications that are coming out now, it's not your it's kind of like the old, it's not your father's old movie, kind of saying, right? I mean, software development has changed, and software developers have to think through a lot more things when they're designing, UIs, right? In fact, people always kind of joke about this term user experience, because it sounds like this big, extravagant thing, but when you sit down and you think about it, it's not just dragging and dropping text boxes and wiring up some code. You really kind of have to think through these things now, and it's not just pulling a tree view and a tab control and you got your application. So why don't you take us through kind of the process that we went through as a team to come up with this application and get to the point where we actually had something that was worth showing.
So
with this project, there's kind of two phases that happen. When I got the phone call from Mark saying, hey, can you help these guys understand user experience? The first call was way too late in the game. They had taken a stab at the Surface app. This is kind of the finished, polished product, but the first rev, and no offense, Mark, was hideous. It had, it was very WinForms-ish type of layout. It was very oriented. You had, for example, this toolbox. You had 9 buttons, 3, 3, 3, and you had this beautiful teal as a part of that color. Well, by the time they called me, the app had already been built, all the transitions.
I chose that teal color just for you.
Just for me, thank you.
I thought it rocked.
Well, and that was the problem, is it was way too late in the game by the time we started chatting. And so we decided to take the second rev at how do we approach user experience in doing our software development. And so the second time, we really took in some several concepts. And this is nothing new to you guys in this problem space, dealing with public sector and pretty much across the industry. When developers are given these types of candy and tools, the immediate response is, I can do it all. I can just go in and crank this thing out, just like Mark said, drag a bunch of controls on here and call it an app, and maybe change the colors. And so what we had to do is we had to go back and start thinking from another perspective on how to use user experience. Everything from state transitions to how are we going to actually interact with this, what about orientation for the toolbox, how can Russ use this and Mark use this, and anyone else sitting at the table with the toolbox, and then all the way to how can I transition from that first screen with the mission control cards to the map, right? Because it's not just a, let me click a tab and here's the next page. And so to do that, we had to leverage some new design principles. And one of them is prototyping. We use this new technique called paper prototyping that it's not new. With video production, this has been around for a while, where you just whiteboard on either a big piece of paper or a whiteboard itself. What are the physical states in our application? We have state 1, it's going to be animated to state 2. Well, with paper prototyping, that's kind of specific to Surface or any type of multi-touch application. It's when you literally take a piece of butcher paper and you go in and you actually cut out what the physical object would be and allow you to move it across the surface and see what really makes sense and what doesn't. Like, for example, a phone, right? You would cut it out, or you'd use a physical phone or the actual toolbox. You cut out a circle and be able to move it around and see what really makes sense from a user experience point of view. So by doing that, we were really able to tackle a lot of those usability problems early in the game and try to make sure that whatever they were building was actually going to have those types of techniques and insights built into it.
One of the fun experiences for me on this project was that, as a developer evangelist, I'm out there talking to people about, things like designer developer workflow, and I'm doing demos and showing samples of how, you can write some code in Visual Studio, and then you can pop open Expression Blend and style a button and that sort of stuff. But, it's sort of in a vacuum. And on this project, we actually got the opportunity to practice designer developer workflow. And even though I sort of drink the Kool-Aid and share it to people, right? Share it with people. I was so surprised at how well it worked on this project. I remember, when we started this out and we kind of did all this interactive design that we did through whiteboarding and paper prototyping, and we started writing code. We had some basic guidelines from you around, how we need to, what kind of containers to put our controls in and all that sort of stuff, so that, when you came around, you could apply your styles and themes and those sorts of things. But for the most part, once we got that initial layout and we all kind of agreed on it, we just started dropping buttons inside of panels and these sorts of things. And, we had the teal color and it was hideous, and I did that, just to get under your skin. But like you said, the application was ugly, right? And then all of a sudden, you're off in Colorado doing your thing, and you pick up the phone and you say, hey guys, I just checked some code in, and we check it out, we compile and we start running it, and we all just had this like giddy moment. We're like, is this our application? And it just looked completely different. Everything looked professional. The buttons looked nice. The mission card looked completely different than what we were doing. And it really kind of, at least for me, made me feel good that all that stuff I've been telling people about designers and developer experience was actually really true. I don't know, what did you guys think of that?
That was, again, my first experience working with it, too. I've read the blogs, I've seen videos, heard all this stuff about how great this philosophy is, designers here, developers there. And this true interaction between them, these two products born in this Visual Studio. But like you, it's, I had that moment of, you know, wow, this completely changes the look and feel, and instead of feeling like this, you know, really, you know, sterile, you know, plain application, all of a sudden now we've got the styling, we've got these, you know, this flipping, we've got,
sort of came to life.
And it came to life. Yeah. And it was like a whole new, I think towards the end of this thing, we were getting burned out from long hours and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, James checked his code and he was like, wow.
I mean, he definitely knocked the rust off of your head. Right. He's really shining, you know, with the user experience and with the cards and the way we're doing manipulations and stuff. Everything just, it blossomed.
Well, I kind of like the separation of labor there, because really, or at least for me, I'm more of a back-end kind of guy. So the behavior, the things that we were trying to put together was more of where I spent my time, and he could take my ugliness and then make it pretty. They didn't mess with the behavior on the back end, but sharing those assets and allowing him to you know, use XAML the way it should be used was really a nifty thing. And, you know, this is a great example of that toolbox went over his nine ugly buttons and it comes back with something like this.
Yeah,
well, that was a big shock.
Yeah, and when you read about the Surface SDK and how to approach the table itself to build apps, he definitely took our what we want to call WinForm ideas and completely revolutionized that for the table itself. So now you have the no orientation, you have the animations, the meshing parts, the flipping, the scattering, all that. Again, it just it blossomed into, wow, we did that.
So, you know, what's interesting about all this is, you know, it's cool and it's fun, it's kind of neat to geek out and talk about all this, but in the end, you know, if software doesn't provide value for your customer, then there's no point in building software, right? If it's just a cool toy, then what's the relevance? So I'm kind of curious if you could give us some insight as to how this provides value to the warfighter.
Go back to what we were talking during the demo itself. I mean, you're taking your sandbox and you virtualize it now, and you're in a horizontal, so the commanders or whoever discusses such a mission are basically eye to eye with, hey, look, no, that's not really a good idea because of this, this, and that. Well, now, you know, when you do that, you bring to the warfighter or to whatever organization that you have to deal with maps and planning and stuff like that, to a whole new approach about how to design, how to think, how to analyze, how to pre-rehearsal, post analysis of what is going on, and you're just increasing the value to the warfighter himself or the user themselves.
So you sort of fit this to their process rather than make their process fit this.
Right, and
they've been doing this already.
We can reach out to systems of record in the web services that are being provided or whatever data is being provided and show this in you know, the horizontal. Now with that, you know, everyone is at the same level. You know, there's not someone at a board writing with their back to someone. Everyone is basically face to face with the round table.
Great. Well, I really want to thank you guys for sharing this with the Channel 9 viewers. I know I had a blast working on this with you guys. Kind of missed the days, you know, with a few weeks that we worked together on this, you know, the late nights and putting this all together. But it was a really, really good experience. Thank you very much.
Thank you.